for this workshop is the second step is necessary if we expect to achieve ongoing recovery. We have two speakers. The first speaker that I would like to introduce, is a young lady that I had an opportunity to meet a couple of years ago at a recovery retreat. It was like a camping retreat. And I'm from the North. I just recently moved down here about almost 3 years now. And I had never, up North, we don't do a lot of camping, especially the women. So that was a total new experience for me. So while I was there, I got a chance to meet a lot of ladies from this area. And this particular lady, she seemed very sweet and very kind. I really don't know anything about her, but I want her to tell us her story. And her name is Catherine P. Thank you,
Kelly. I'm an addict. My name is Catherine. Oh, I thought for a minute that was my ex-husband walking in the door, and that tripped me out. I'm sorry. Not that it matters, right? Again, I'm an addict. My name's Catherine, and my clean date is May 4th, 2011. I'm going to preface all this with that I have not had a lot of sleep, y'all. So whatever I say, you know, I did pray, and I asked, you know, to share well with y'all today. You know, this is a convention, and I'm an addict, and I like to stay up and dance late at night and listen to speakers share at midnight, and I still wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, even though my alarm wasn't set for six, I was still awake. But and I drank a lot of coffee, y'all. So if you see me shaking, it's not just my nerves, because I haven't had any breakfast, just this mint in my mouth. But anyway, so, and I did not bring my literature with me. I thought about it, and I thought I would probably just want to read the whole thing to y'all instead of sharing about my experience. But I did bring this. My friend made this little picture for me to look at, because, you know, y'all are the ones who initially gave me hope, right? And that's a lot what the second step is about for me. And today I have so much hope and faith and belief in y'all and in this program and in the God of my understanding, which wasn't always the case, right? When I first got here, I didn't come here because I thought that I had a problem. I knew I did, right? But I honestly came here because my son had a problem and I wanted him to have a better, different life than I did. And like I said, my clean date is May 4th of 2011. The first time I came here was in December of 2008 or 2009. It was eight. I can't remember because, right, it wasn't my clean date. And I got a lot of white key tags. And I think I worked, you know, 1, 2, 3 a few times, 1, 2, 3, and I'd get high again. And there was even a period of time that I had 9 months clean. And, I was real good at letting these other people and things have this power over me. Instead of a higher power, I let, you know, one of my ex-husbands tell me that I couldn't do anything right? But I could get high real right. And so, you know, he'd say that shit to me and I'd get pissed off and get high, or other things as well. But I remember the last time that I used, and I'd been using, you know, I had 9 months, and some guy that I was living with said some shit and pissed me off, and I went and got high again. And I stayed like that for a couple of weeks, and I remember sitting, I was in my mother's car, because, you know, I was living with my mom, and I'm pretty sure I was in her car. Anyways, and I'd been calling the dope man trying to get some more dope, right? And this particular dope man had certain hours. You could only call him in certain hours. You could, So I'm in my car waiting for him to call me back, and thinking, you know, I've been doing this, y'all, for 30 years. I started using the first time when I was 10, was the first time I got high. So I've been doing this for a long, long time, and had been real tired of it for a long time. But I honestly didn't believe that that I could change, right? That this power could change me. I didn't believe that I was worthy of being clean and happy and free like I saw y'all being. I mean, I came to the meetings and I saw y'all all happy and smiling and laughing and enjoying life, and I wanted that. And for a little while, I thought, well, maybe I could do that. Maybe I could be like them. But then, you know, this disease would tell me, you're not like them. You're not that fucking good. You're a piece of shit is what it would tell me, right? You know, you don't deserve to be clean. So I continued to use. But like I said, so that day I'm sitting in my car, and I'd seen y'all. I had seen it working in y'all's lives, and I had seen it working in my son's life. You know, they say there's not a model recovering addict, but in my eyes, if there was one, he was it. He lived and breathed this program, and it changed his life, and I saw it, you know. So that helped me, and the fact that, you know, y'all told me that I could do this, and the fact that I had been staying clean, even though I wasn't super happy a lot of that time, the whole idea that I was able to put together 9 months was showing me that there was some kind of evidence of something that was working in my life, right? So that day sitting in that car, I didn't realize it then, but I realize it now that I think what I practiced in that day was a second step, because I was so tired of doing what I was doing, and I thought maybe, just maybe, if I work this program like y'all have told me, maybe this power could restore me to sanity. And I'm not completely sane all the time today, but I'm a lot more sane than I was, you know, back then. I didn't have a whole lot of problem with the part about being insane, knowing that I was insane. It was very clear to me, you know, I'd been in a mental hospital, never been arrested, but had been in a mental hospital for 30 days. And I don't think that sane people go to mental hospitals for 30 days, right? So, and just, you know, the evidence of my actions, all the crazy shit that I did. I think I've always been pretty open-minded, you know, because I was going to try anything, right? So, So that was part of my craziness, was just, you know, I would try anything, and I was very open-minded to that, so I should also be open-minded to this program. You know, again, like I said, it's just a lot of a hope that I get from y'all, that I get from this program, that I get from that second step, and the faith, you know, which turns into the faith and the trust, and I see it working in my life today. I'm not that crazy woman that I was. You know, it also talks in our literature about living the program and coincidences, things that happen that prove to us, that show us that, you know, that I am living this program. You know, I recall a time wanting to lie to somebody and tell them something that wasn't true, right? And had every intentions of doing that. And when I went to go tell that lie, instead the truth just came out of my mouth. And it was like, what the hell was that? You know, that wasn't what I intended to say. But to me, you know, again, it was evidence of a power greater than myself working in my life today. You know, I find that the more that I'm willing to trust that process and trust that higher power, the more sanity I do get, you know, in different areas of my life. You know, I want to go back and talk about that whole humility part, right? Where I said that, you know, I felt like a piece of shit and the things that I did, and that I wasn't worthy of being clean and being free. Of this, you know, I still have the disease of addiction, but it doesn't have that hold over me like it did before. So I am free from that today. So that, I think, was the biggest part for me, was, right, to realizing, to come to believe that that I was worthy, that that my higher power did find me worthy to be like y'all, that I still struggle sometimes with that today, not quite as much at all, but and, you know, and I even have that, I can get that whole greater than feeling too, but, you know, most of my life it's been the feeling less than. I don't know where I was going with that, but how long have I talked?
about 10 minutes.
I talked 10 minutes. Oh, wow. Okay. They told me I had to talk for 30 minutes. So do I have to talk for 30 minutes? Yeah. No.
I mean, just, you know, let God lead you.
Yeah, yeah. So, again, you know, I the second step, it's about, yeah, faith, trust, and hope, and belief, you know, trust this process. And I continue to do that today, and it's not that hard for me to do, even though before it was, but, and I think I'm going to shut up and let our other speaker share now. Thank y'all.
I want to thank Catherine for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us. Now, our next speaker, I have the pleasure and honor of knowing our next speaker. Now, a lot of you know me from being here these last couple of years, but this lady has been knowing me 20 years. From the time that I came into the program over 20 years ago, I was doing service work through H&I, and I went to the county jail, and I served in that position for over 7.5 years. And during that time, I met our next speaker. She was a revolving door in the county jail. I'm gonna let you tell your story, but throughout this journey called recovery, her and I have had some ups and some downs. We have did some things. We have helped raise each other's children. And I remember her mom asked me before she passed away, wow, we found your mother together after she passed away. Me and this girl done been through some things together. Her mom said, I don't know why you still her friend. And all I could remember telling her mother was, you know what? Somebody loved me until I was able to love myself. And it took what it took for her to get to where she is today. And I always told her, if you just get clean, you got a story to tell. And they need to hear your story. So with that, I'm going to introduce my baby sister, Tammy M. from Columbus, Ohio.
Hello, family. I'm an addict named Tammy.
Hey, Tam.
I'm grateful to be alive, clean, and at a Narcotics Anonymous convention. And I'm so grateful I'm not on Mission Impossible, because using is Mission Impossible. You know, I'm a firm believer that our steps are placed in order for a reason. So the second steps, it's in our literature where it says that it's necessary for ongoing recovery. And then it goes on to say that a lot of us pass over this step with a minimal concern, only to find that the remaining steps won't work. And I never was able to get with that. First, I had to get with having a thorough ass whooping. You know, so I always thought surrender was supposed to be, and I, you know, I got plenty of fucking white key tags where I went up, and I was in tears, and because I always felt like I was supposed to feel some type of way. And I have to remember that as a little girl, I shut down on feeling. You know, I came up in an abusive household. I have a 32-year-old son by my uncle, and I thought as a little girl that my uncle was my boyfriend, and I've learned through therapy that was my way of dealing with the trauma, you know. So, and I thought something was wrong with that, you know, because I knew other little girls weren't sleeping with their uncles and their brothers and their cousins and their mom and the neighbors and their mama's friends. But all that shit was happening to me as a child. So I can remember being told, we can't go in the house. Y'all stay outside and play. So me being nosy as hell, I want to know what the hell they doing inside that I can't go inside. And my friend said, girl, you smell that? They smoking grass. I said, girl, don't nobody smoke no grass. She said, yes, they do. I said, why would they smoke grass? She said, it'll make you feel different. Oh. All I wanted was to feel different. I didn't want to feel nasty because my mom told me when I told her what was happening, she said, don't tell nobody. People going to think you a nasty girl. And I didn't really know what a nasty girl was. All I know is that from the look in my mother's eyes and the tone of voice she used when she told me that I didn't want to be that nasty girl. So I remember when I was able to go in the house, I remember going to get some paper. I remember going to get some weed, and I got my little entourage. And we went in the bushes, which we called our clubhouse, and we started smoking the grass. I pulled it up out the damn grass. Now, it was years later I found out they were smoking weed. You know, and you actually purchased this from a replica weed dealer, you know. So, because I just wanted to feel different. I didn't want to feel nasty. Now my first addiction was fantasy, and my second one was manipulation. You know, I love to manipulate people. But my disease tell me I suffer from obsession and compulsion and total self-centeredness, right? So my self-centeredness started as a kid. When my mom would tell us, go stand in the damn corner. Y'all getting on my nerves. And I used to stand in a corner and imagine what everybody would be doing if I wasn't here. See, my disease attacked me at a young age, telling me, oh, if I wasn't here, they'd be kicking it, they'd be laughing, they'd be having a good time. That's total self-centeredness. My ass was standing in the corner because I couldn't be still, and I kept fucking with my brothers. So she put my ass in the corner because she was tired of whooping all our ass. It was five of us. It was one of her. You know, so I would think and imagine that the whole world would change if I just wasn't here. Like, I really had that type of power. You know, but I thought I had that type of power on people suffering from low self-esteem, low self-value, and no self-worth. I remember jumping in cars and the tricks asking me, well, how much? And I couldn't even give them a fucking value. My response, which I thought was cute, was shit, all I could get. That's what I told them. You know, so coming in here and what happened was I started off smoking the grass. I used to sip the beer and shit. You know, I started smoking cigarettes young. And at 12, I graduated from junior high, from elementary school. And like I said, my mom had five kids. Five daddies, were none of them there. Okay? So I didn't understand until I got older that my oldest brother, daddy, was my mama's stepdad. Because he the only one who ain't got an initial for who the hell his daddy is. So going to my graduation, it was four of us graduating. My two oldest brothers was graduating from high school, and we didn't know the oldest one was graduating until that day. I think they just put his ass out because they was tired of him. So they just gave that nigga cap and gown and diploma. I swear to God, he came home like, hey, I'm graduating at three. So my brother that's over me, he was graduating from the eighth grade and me from the sixth grade. And I can remember looking out there and these people giving me all these awards and all my teachers having all this good shit to say. I told you I was, you know, in love with manipulating. So I was the teacher's pet. I had a little bit of knowledge. You know, I studied hard. I did all my brother's homework. And I had three of their asses is older than me. So I had all this stuff and my mom wasn't there because she was at the graduation with one of my other brothers, with one of my brothers. And so it hurt me. So I can remember saying, I'm going to be bad. And that's what the fuck I did. I started down the path of self-destruction at a real young age, man. And somehow or another, it was the finest nigga in the projects knock on my door to smoke some weed. But he was smoking what we call Coca Puffs. Y'all might know him as 51s. It was crack and marijuana mixed in a joint. And so I got hooked. And I smoked for a couple of months and got kicked out of my fucking apartment. I was only paying $70 a month, but I couldn't seem to pay that. So in the first step, we talk about that unmanageability, and this is unmanageability I had my whole life. You know, so I got turned out, and I wind up catching the case, going to jail for the first time. And after that initial jail thing, I mean, I cried and shit. They shut the gate. It was like a big-ass boom. But after that first trip, that shit was like going to summer camp. Because I had adapted. thinking this is what the fuck happened. You know, and I came to believe that if I sat in this bitch 12 days and don't get sentenced, they gonna let my ass go. They gonna arrest me that same night, but they gonna let my ass go. You know, because I would get out of jail and I couldn't even make it to my mama house without catching a new case. On the same corner, doing the same shit. I can remember getting arrested every day of the week by the same police officers. They kept talking about, Tammy, you ain't got no warrants. I'm like, not till Monday, because I knew my ass wasn't going to court. You know, so my disease had me. At first, I thought the shit was fun, and I thought all that little shit was cute. You know what I'm saying? And I can remember sitting in what we call crack powwows. That's when more than one person got some dope to share, and everybody can laugh and smile and shit till the dope run out, and you better not turn that motherfucking fan on because you fucking up my flame, all that type of dumb shit, you know? So I can remember being at the crack powwow telling everybody because I thought it was cute, but who the fuck walks into the police horse twice? Tweaking. Like, how you miss a whole motherfucking horse? They was like, sit down, you going to jail. I'm like, what I do? Bitch, you tweaking, you know? Eventually, I did what we call was the geographical change, you know? So, and somewhere in this mix, it was a day where I was smoking crack, and the neighbor downstairs from me, she was smoking crack, but she was what I call worse off than I was. Now, she was a motherfucking addict. You know, because she got the police at her house and her daughter whooping her ass. She needs some motherfucking help. I'm hiding in the basement because I can't come out. Ain't nothing wrong with me. I'm just hiding in the basement. I'ma smoke up all my motherfucking evidence. And so my baby daddy is looking for me, and I can hear my son screaming, Mom, Mom, because he can't find me, right? So I come up. I say, look. I was in the basement, smoke crack. I think I might need some help. So I go into treatment for the first time, and I promise you that was over 25 years ago because I wasn't even pregnant with my youngest son, and he's 22 now. So I go into treatment for the first time, and I can remember y'all motherfuckers coming in the treatment center, fucking up my heart for life. Talking about we are people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover. That's how that shit sounds. What the fuck? I just got a crack problem. I ain't got no drug problem. I ain't got no motherfucking disease. I just got a crack problem. And if I could put down the crack, my life would be okay. Remember I told you I stayed in the projects paying $70 a month rent and I couldn't pay that shit right. But the disease, you know how we got get just that selective thinking and we only remember the good motherfucking times. It totally dismissed that shit. Like that shit never happened. It really just came back up recently doing step work. Like damn bitch, it was unmanageable then. So I'm thinking for years that I just had a crack problem. So here I go with the revolving door. Yeah, mental hospital. Shit, the mental hospital was another form of manipulation. Because after 2 days, when he started bringing me flowers and candy and shit, I was the motherfucker getting everybody. Get up, Catherine. It's time for group, baby. Time for group. I thought I would go to jail and think the motherfuckers would come to jail just so I could pray them out. What the fuck was wrong with me? You know, because I thought I was an evangelist. And I ain't have to do this in that shit. You know, God just spoke to me. And he done told me I'm a fucking evangelist. I just got to put the crack down because all I got was a crack problem. Right? So I leave Toledo. I moved to Columbus. And y'all know what I did. I took my ass with me. So I'm doing good at first. Just smoking weed and drinking my little 211. Yes, motherfucker, 211. 8.1% alcohol is what I drunk. It's rock gut and this shit stank. It stank. I didn't know then, but I know now. Because I smelled somebody drinking a 211. I was like, that's what the fuck? Anyway, so I get to Columbus. And like I said, now I know and I truly believe that I too suffer from the disease of addiction. And because I took my ass with me. So I did good for a minute. I'm staying with my little cousin. But I'm going to the store and I'm watching what I call tour guides. Because I was with an old man who took me everywhere from Toledo to Florida, and everywhere I went, I smoked crack because I found the tour guide. Now, the tour guide is a crackhead female that's turning, flagging cars down. You get with her because she know where every motherfucking thing at. She know where the shooter at, where the dope at, and where to go smoke it. So I'm watching the tour guide. So this was my first initial response. So I was like, here, baby, let me give you a dollar. Girl, I remember the struggle. The struggle is real. 2 weeks later, I was in the vacant house, smoked crack with her ass. And I continue to smoke crack. I don't know what happened August the 22nd, 2019, 2016. I don't know what happened that day. All I know is that by the end of my road, I got tired of the people coming to me with their crack issues. And I can remember thinking, why do my neighbors need to know your ass need a pusher? Why do my neighbors need to know the motherfucking lighter won't strike? You know, I got tired of people coming to me with their crack issues, and a light bulb went away and said, if I could get rid of the drugs, I could get away from the people. So August the 23rd, because the 22nd wasn't no different from no other high. It was the same bullshit. Take a hit, pick a sore on your body, peek out the window. Except now all the windows is boarded the fuck up. But I'm still looking out these motherfuckers because I still see them out there. And they still coming and ain't fucking got here yet. It was the same shit. But on the 23rd, I prayed. Because in the end, I started to believe that it had to be something fucking different for me. I was praying to God that if this was all it was, please just take me out. And I got up and I prayed. And I got my ass to the meeting. And I sat through the meeting the whole time. And I did the surrender walk. And it wasn't no tears this motherfucking time. It wasn't, you know, I always thought it had to be a big show and everybody get up and hug your ass. I didn't even felt like I was worthy to be hugged. That's how fucked up I was. And I got my white key tag and I set my ass down. And through the whole meeting, my mind kept going back to them two ice cold beers in my refrigerator. Now, y'all got to listen to the word because we have to be real careful on what the fuck we tell ourselves. And ice cold sounds very inviting, don't it? So I got the nerve, just a little bit of hope, to go and tell someone that I got these two beers in my refrigerator and they worrying the fuck out of me. And that woman took me to my house while I poured, stood next to me while I poured those beers out. Then I went through and cleansed my house out looking for all the shooters and the pushers and the chores. Because I don't know about anybody else, but I caught a whole lot of motherfucking cases for guest shooters. Why? Because I got to have a second one for your ass so you don't fuck with me while I'm smoking. So I always had supplies everywhere. You know, so I had to get this shit out my house. And this woman stood with me while I did that. She gave me some bus passes and said, I'll see you tomorrow, Tammy. She didn't say, oh, what you gonna do different this time? Because I don't fucking know. All I know is I don't want to use no crack no more just for the day. I don't want to fucking get high. I'll worry about tomorrow when it comes, if I see it. Because at this point, I don't even want to live. And I made it to that meeting. I called the sponsor that I had before, and I said, I'm ready. She didn't respond, so I started doing what she told me before. I started texting her my daily schedule. This is what I got to do, because I suffer from ADHD, and I got ADHD from eating paint chips in a vacant house that I used to go in through the back door, and they had the big-ass sign on the front door that said this house was lead-based, but every time I took a hit and I seen paint chips, I thought it was crack. So I pick it up, put the shit in my mouth, find out it wasn't no crack, take another hit, and it repeat itself over and over and over again. So I suffer from ADHD. And so when I have a whole lot of shit to do, sometimes the shit look overwhelming, and I get to thinking, like, how the fuck I'm going to do all this? Well, Tammy, you just do the next right thing. So my sponsor will have me send her a text of everything I got to do that day. Because when we come back up in here, we ain't been to the doctor in fucking years. It's some shit that I started to do that I wasn't doing to take care of myself before, like eating on a regular basis, trying to sleep on a regular basis. You know, I had to move into my bedroom because my house had become a crack house. Didn't nobody give a fuck I didn't have no windows. I didn't give a fuck I didn't have no windows. So without that second step, I had to get that thorough ass whooping so I could get a thorough surrender. I had to surrender. not just to the motherfucking drugs, but I had to surrender to the disease of addiction. That was the thing that kept me eluded for all them fucking years. I couldn't see having an addiction was like cancer. This shit ain't like diabetes. I had a brother who died from HIV, full-blown AIDS. This shit ain't like that. But I gotta treat my disease every fucking day, or my disease is gonna treat me. I believe that shit to that. So I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to some sanity. I told you about the insanity before the dope. I told you about the insanity through the dope. Normal people don't walk into fucking horses. They just don't do that shit. They see the horse, might walk on the other side of the street. No, my ass walked into the horse twice. Twice. Normal people don't get arrested by the cop or the horse. My ass did twice. Cops on horse, cops on bikes, even got arrested by the helicopter. This motherfucker all the way in the sky gonna tell me to get the fuck off the street. I told him, fuck you. Police says, whoop, get in. You know, so those were some of the experiences that I had, and the sad part is my disease always tried to make it seem like this shit was fun. Sitting in the motherfucking jail is not fun. Looking at these trays and this slop, and I don't know what the fuck the greed was up with the greed of brown baloney, but that shit ain't fun. I have became conditioned to a state of mind that's common with addiction. And it was okay. It was okay. Bitch, going to jail is not like summer camp. I went camping, and that shit wasn't shit like jail. I was free to go outside and do what the fuck I wanted to do. In jail, I was told what to do. You know, so once I was able to surrender to the program. Now, if anybody don't know, the program is our 12 steps. The 12 steps is our solution to our dilemma. Our dilemma is addiction. You know, and it's made up of two components, obsession and compulsion. Obsession is a never-ending thought about that one something, because now it ain't the dope. Compulsion is responding to that one, to that thought over and over and over again, despite the negative consequences. It's going to bring some physical, some mental, and now some spiritual anguish. When I do shit that don't feel right to my spirit, it fucks with me. The book says when I don't take care of my personal responsibility, it decreases my self-esteem, right? So one day I get all the fucking way to work, hit the parking lot, and decide I don't want to do this shit today. So I call my boss up, and I'm trying to muster up a cough or two, a sick sound. Y'all know how we do. I don't feel good. She said, did you bring my water? I said, Miss Kelly, I just said I don't feel good. She going, I'm looking right at you. I ain't see her ass. She's sitting in a motherfucking car. I said, what you in your car hiding for? But even that is my disease trying to get me to do something. Because, see, I got work ethics today. I show up for my motherfucking life today. I show up for my recovery. I can show up for my kids. I can show up for my grandson. And I damn sure show up for my job. Y'all taught me that, hey, seven traditions state that we must be fully self-supported, declining outside contribution. See, I don't trick no more. I go to work. I ain't got no sugar daddy. I ain't looking for one. I don't want no nigga paying my bills. It feel good to pay my shit myself. It feels damn good to be responsible for Tammy today. Because for so long, I was looking for you to do for me what I wasn't fucking willing to do for myself. How the fuck I'm going to get an attitude with you because you let me smoke up all the money? Then the next day, I'm like, this nigga can't even buy me a burger. But you didn't think about a burger when you was copping all that dough. You know? And that's how I lived my life for so long. But to be fully self-supporting, it's a hell of a feeling. I'm still on Section 8. That shit go in January. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Because for years, it was a manipulation of systems, manipulation of this person, manipulation of that person. And today, I'm just okay. So where's my insanity at today? So I did some step work, right? And so by the time I got to the sixth step, I only thought, I don't know what the fuck wrong with these people, but I ain't got no list of character defects. I got three. So I called my sponsor and tell her, I said, see, I found three character defects. And she said, that's a character defect within itself. So a guy gave me a list of possible character defects, and I found a whole lot more. And I wasn't happy with that nigga for a while. I wasn't happy with him. But we still cool, because he helped me. So I'm learning to change. But my insanity now is, if this bitch come back up in here and I know I just put a motherfucking mashed potatoes in that bag and say she ain't got her mashed potatoes, I'm going to hit her in her motherfucking mouth. Hitting her in her mouth means I lose my job. My job is to say, oh, I'm so sorry about that, ma'am. Let me get you another mashed potatoes. But my mind says, I know I just gave that bitch that mashed potatoes. I work at Popeyes. And I work right next to a liquor store. So I deal with a lot of people that's drunk that want to come to your window and blow smoke in your face like the shit cool. And I have to remember when it was me. When I thought it was okay to roll blunts on the Greyhound bus station, I'm sitting there like, this nigga just really rolling a blunt over there. Well, bitch, how many blunts did you roll on the Greyhound bus station? How about this one? How many times was you in that bathroom smoking crack and tweaking and could come out there till the car stopped? Yeah. I'm in a whole new city. I'm still in the bathroom on a dime piece. Tweaking. Thought I dropped something. I don't know, you know, I always pass over that second step and being coming to a restoration of sanity. You know, because the most obvious insanity that we have is the actual physical drug usage. You know what I'm saying? But when you put the dope down and the dope been removed for a minute now what the fuck is it? And why are you behaving like this? You know, why is my employees saying they don't want to work with my ass? Miss Tammy talked to us some type of way. No, that's not okay. At first, I thought it was their issue. I don't have to fuck around with them. I'm the nicest person there is. Because I'm great with the customers. I really am. But I chew into their ass. And I have to learn how to talk to people the way I want to be talked to. Going back to the elementary shit my mama taught me. Treat others the way you want to be treated. You know, I can't bark and bark at them all day long. And then I want to blame it on my ADHD. Like, I'm just loud. They just take it the wrong way. No, bitch. Everybody said the same shit about your ass. It could be some truth in it. And then my goddamn boss ain't in recovery. She'd be like, well, maybe you want to do a self-examination. Bitch, I don't want to do no self-examination because the problem ain't me. Miss Kelly, the problem is they ass. That's what I want to say. But for real, I'm the problem. I'm the problem. You know, and I have to work on that. And I just got out the damn office before I went on vacation. And my whole mind said, when she first started coming to me with this, I thought she had a problem with me. This bitch just don't like me. She set me up for failure. Why every goddamn manager meeting about me and my behaviors? It was a long time before I heard my boss say, Tammy, you can do this. You are an amazing manager. You just have to tone down. Take a deep breath. Do I gotta call you every day and tell you to breathe before you start your shift? Do you need me to call you every day and pray with you before you start your shift? It took a long time before I heard her say that. And she said it every meeting. But because my mindset went back to the low self-esteem, the low self-value, the low self-worth, my disease immediately told me she's attacking me. So I have to stop being the victim. Now I'm victimizing myself and others. And I have a problem with that. You know, so I'm really really working on, maybe Miss Kelly do need to call me and I pray before my damn shift every week. Because I don't want to be the boss that nobody wants to work with. I don't want to be that person. You know, and I don't think it has anything to do with my people pleasing. It's about me being an effective leader. You know, we become leaders up in here, even if it's just in our own damn family. And I don't want to speak about mine because all these niggas getting the fuck out of my house when I get home. I told them I'm going to just give y'all niggas the house. Y'all can just have the house. Somebody pay the rent. You know, so I came to believe in that power because when I look at it realistically, the dope was a power greater than me. The dope told me what to do, when to do it, and when not to do it. So when I put the dope down, ironically, I don't walk through the alleys. I don't go in vacant houses no more. I'm not picking up shit that look, everything I see don't look like crack. You know, and one of the most profound things was seeing some fucking salt rock and knowing it was salt rock. Because when I smoked dope, I thought it was dope. I was stuck behind a salt truck picking up salt rock. Because my mind said, somebody threw their sack in there, you gonna find it. Now, who the fuck gonna throw their sack in a goddamn salt rock truck? But I was thoroughly convinced that that was true. So when I put the dope down, all that insanity left. Now I'm dealing with the new insanity. Learning to live life on life's terms. Learning to become a better person. Learning to apply some spiritual principles. That was some more shit that eluded me. Like, I wrote out steps before. And I even picked out the spiritual principles in them. But why applying them motherfuckers to my life? It just didn't seem like that's what I was supposed to do. So that ain't what the fuck I did. I was not powerless over shit. And I wind up picking dope up again. Now, okay, I'm powerless over this lady saying she ain't get her mashed potatoes and gravy. I do have power to dissolve this by just giving her the damn mashed potatoes and gravy and letting that lady go on with her life. And keeping it simple. You know, I really try to keep my life just real simple. And I had a sponsor that used to tell me, Tammy, just do the next right thing. She said, you ain't even got to do it for the right reason. Just do the next right thing. And it'll catch up with you. I heard from years, if you bring the body, the mind will catch up. You know, so I ain't got to figure out how this shit work because I wanted to analyze every motherfucking thing and I couldn't stop smoking crack and I could write out your steps, but I couldn't stop smoking crack, you know? And I could pray for you. And when I thought I was the motherfucking evangelist of jail, I prayed all the people went home and they did, but my ass couldn't get up out of there. Oh, you going to do them 90 days. You going to do them. So now I just believe that I'm an addict, that I suffer from the disease of addiction. I know, without a shadow of a doubt, I have finally had a thorough ass whooping. I'm not getting back in the ring with Mike. He got the title. I'm through. I've surrendered. And it was quiet. It was just real quiet. It was real subtle. I didn't worry about if I was going to use again. I know I'm not using no more. Just for today, I'm not picking up no dope. And all I got to get through is today. Just for today, I'm not picking up no motherfucking cookies. Y'all think it's funny, but bitch, I was on 2 packs a day. 2 packs. And then my self-esteem got started fucking with me because I was heavier than I had ever been in my life. And my back fat hurt. Y'all know that fat meat right here. That shit hurts. You know. So, I'm no longer on any type of medications. And I'm not suggesting to anybody that's on medication to stop taking their medication. Be a good damn patient. Because I stopped when my doctor felt I was ready to stop. And I'm living the best life I ever lived. Thanks for allowing me to share. My name is Tammy and I'm an addict.
We want to thank you, Tammy, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us. Thank you for allowing me to serve as your chairperson for this workshop. Will you please join me in making a circle and closing the meeting with the third step prayer?
Just say, you know, stop saying circle. They just say, can we just join and make a shape?
to make a change. Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody for showing up. And can we have a moment of silence followed by the third step prayer? Take my will and
take my will and my life. Guide me in my recovery and show me how to live clean and free.
I'm just saying.
That's really?
Yeah, a lot of people say that. I've been clean 31 years. My homeowners, all the new people say that.
That's so funny.
But you read it in the literature.
It never says that.
It never says how to live. It's just how to live.
All right. That's funny.
Because I had to show my sponsor.
Yeah.
So why do you keep saying that? Maybe you didn't. I said, read it. You get it in the basic text, it says, show us how to live. I appreciate it.
And that's an added, that was an added part. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Equals 1,000 meetings. That's why I go to convention. You get so much deeper info. I love you, man.
Okay.
Hey, I'm sorry, let's go. I told you. I know, I was in a meeting. I'm so sorry. I was like, maybe she's asleep. I was like trying to tempt you. I was like, oh, there's Starbucks. Did you need anything? Or the release form? Did you call twice? Kelly, just once. Somebody else. Oh, okay. All right. I don't know. Did they already sign the release form for you? I don't know, she did. I signed mine last night.
Well, you did?
I didn't mean to. Maybe I, but
I don't know if Tim
is ever.
Probably have a foot now because I put it back in my pocket and I never carry my phone in my pocket. But yeah, no, that's all good now. I figured when it rained twice, I thought, well, it must be important, but I'm in a meeting and whatever it is can wait. Yep. Did I have you?
You didn't. That's why I was getting here because I didn't get to.
We missed you.
Aw.
Very short and sweet.
I did.
I'm so sorry about now. Yeah, I'm not yet, but I will be because I didn't get much sleep last night. But that's cool because conventions aren't really for sleep,
right?